Next Tuesday is the Feast of St. Joseph. St. Joseph is the patron of the Universal Church, the patron of husbands and fathers. He's the patron of families, expectant mothers, those selling and buying homes, craftsmen and working people. He's also the patron of Canada. He is also the terror of demons who defends and protects us, and he especially prays for those who are dying, that they may have a happy death. But I think that we need to do more than just pray to St. Joseph or ask for his intercession. We need to imitate him. And this is hard, or at least for me, because we know so very little about him. We know he was a righteous man. We know he followed the law, both religious and civil. We know he was a man who had dreams, but that's really about it. Everything else we say about him, about being a good husband, a hard worker, a guide and protector of the Holy Family, a good dad, we just assume because he was chosen by God to be the husband of Mary and the foster father of Jesus. So I guess we can assume all those things. We can also assume that a lot of what Jesus learned about being a man, even about being a Jew, about being a responsible adult, about how to treat women, he learned from Joseph. More importantly, we can assume that Joseph was a man who tried to do God's will. For me, that's enough. This week, let's ask St. Joseph to intercede for us that we can be like him in following the Father's will. I'm Deacon Pedro, and this is the Salt and Light Hour. Hello and welcome to an all-new Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro, and sitting here with me is Jermaine Bagnall.
Hello, hello.
How's I keep asking everybody how their Lent is going. So I guess we're halfway through Lent.
Working our way through. Did you give anything up for Lent this time?
See, that's a question, everybody. I said this to Sister Mary Paul last week. I've been doing a consecration to St. Joseph.
Oh, nice.
So that I guess it concludes on March 19th, right? So it concluded on March 19th. And that was an interesting thing to do during Lent. But now I have to think of what else I can be sort of focusing on. I also did, I don't know if you've seen them, but there's like these websites or these apps where you put in like basic information and then it gives you like the prayer you should be praying all year or like the saint that is your intercessor. Yeah, they exist.
My cousin
sent me this one that it was like, I think it was like to tell you what is the saint that you should be praying for this year. And the one that came up for me was actually not a saint. It was like Merciful Jesus. And I thought that was very strange, but then I thought, okay, well, maybe there's something here. I should be like focusing more on Jesus, God's mercy and merciful. And mm-hmm. Of course, every reading, every day, everything has something about mercy and God's mercy and the merciful God and the mercy of God and Christ merciful and Mary, like merciful Mary and all this stuff. So I've been focusing on mercy. So that is one extra thing that I have been doing more so during Lent.
That's incredible. And you're going to need to share that site/app with me. I think that's interesting.
I'll have to find it.
Curious to know what it produces for me.
I'll have to find it. There's a few others that I've seen, but I'll have to find, people send it on Instagram or whatever.
It gets lost in that digital ether.
It does. And it may or may not be helpful. I don't know. So Jermaine, today Jillian is going to be with us. She, as you know, she doesn't like it when I say she's our parenting expert, but she's the one who always tells us something that she's learned from her kids, something that her kids teach her mm-hmm. about being a daughter of God. So I actually don't know what she's going to share with us today, but she always has a little nugget of wisdom to share with us. And I presume that it has to do with Lent. And so Jillian will be here in about 5 minutes with what I learned from my kids. And then right after that, we will have you with a book or two,
Today it's singular. It's one because
one book.
It was a dense one. It was a big one. Do I say it now or should I save it?
It's up to you. If you want to leave a teaser or you want to say who the author is, maybe that's enough of a teaser.
It's Pope John Paul II.
Okay, yeah, that's dense. Okay, you don't have to say more. if anybody has read Saint John Paul II, you know that he's a philosopher and it's beautiful, but it's so good. Okay, so we're looking forward to know what that book by John Paul II is, and it's dense enough that you are only going to share one book
Yes.
today. So that's book ends with Germaine Bagnell in about 15 minutes. And then Germaine, actually, it's good that you're talking about just one book because our featured interview in the second half of the show is with a children's author.
Ah, okay. Very
Carissa, I
fortuitous.
know Carissa Douglas. She's been on the show a few times to tell us about her little series, The Little Duglings, that she
Ah, okay.
writes based on her. And I believe there are 15 children now in the Douglas family.
Wait, fifteen?
You're going to have to stay tuned and listen to the conversation with Carissa Douglas. Yes, they have 15 children.
That's a
And Carissa is an author, and she's been writing stories since her children were little to help the
okay.
children learn about the faith. And as the children got older, the stories got a little older as well. So now she's writing
Okay.
young adult novels. And so she's has the fourth book just came out. I haven't read it, but the third one was called Cryptic Crusade. And every so it's her children actually go on these adventures. And they get to meet saints because there's a little bit of kind of mystical stories as well. So, and
Yeah.
in Cryptic Crusade, the saint was Saint Teresa of Avila. So the children get to learn a little bit about Saint Teresa, and there's some gifts and things and graces that they learn.
Okay.
And in the second book, Lair of Illusion, they got to meet Saint John Newman, and so that's kind of fun. And in the first one that she wrote, Mystic Informant, they actually was a whole adventure with Padre Pio.
Oh, that's
So,
amazing.
The fourth book is called Serpent in the Scavi, and I do not know what the saint is, but if people want to find out more about that, they can stay tuned. And in about 25 minutes, I'll be speaking with Carissa Douglas. I know, Germaine, you like children's books, so you might enjoy the Little Duglings series. And then at the end of the show, we're going to be meeting, speaking with someone that I met probably 23 years ago. He's been doing music for a long, long time. His name is Michael Zabrocky. He's one of those, when I met him, he had long hair, beard, kind of originally that first wave of artists that were doing Christian music in the 60s and 70s, you know, doing like Christian rock. And of course, now he's older and the music has also gotten a little more toned down.
Little more mellowed with age.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to ask him about that because I don't think
Yeah.
that it has to get mellow with age. But his music definitely has gotten a little bit more sacred, maybe a little more suited to the liturgy. He has
Gotcha.
a new album dedicated to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, called Consecration. And so we're going to get to speak to Michael Zabrocky, and get to learn a little bit more about what he does and why, and about his music. And of course, we're going to get to listen to some of those tracks throughout the program. So in about 45 minutes, Michael
Wonderful.
Zabrocky about his new album, Consecration. And if you're not going to be around, you know, you can always go to our website, slmedia.org, and listen to all our programs there. And not just our radio program or the podcast, but you can watch all our television programs there on demand at Salt and Light Television, slmedia.org. Okay, so Germaine, let's start.
Okay.
Here is Michael Zabrocky with All Is Changed to Love from his new album, Consecration, Hymns and Prayers to the Sacred Heart of Jesus.
Heart of Christ, O throne of grace, hope of sinners, joy of saints, in your heart we find the place where all is changed to love. Heart of Christ, formed in the womb of Mary, Virgin ever pure. Here we find love's mercy sure, where all is changed to love. All will hands fall. Broken souls, oh, heed his call. Healing balm is given to all, where all is changed to love. Heart of Christ, oh, guide our way as we journey.
That was Michael Zabrocki with All Is Changed to Love from his new album, Consecration, Hymns and Prayers to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And we're going to be speaking with Michael Zabrocki at the end of the program, so stay tuned. And now it's time for What I Learned from My Kids with Jillian Cantor, who I presume, I mean, welcome, Jillian. It's good to see you again. I know, you. I always jump to the next thing. I presume it's a Lenten lesson?
Yes, let's embrace Lent.
Is that a good assumption?
We'd rather embrace Easter time, right? But we're in Lent and let's live through it.
Can't get to Easter without going through Lent.
Yeah, the only way through it is through it.
Yeah, that's it. So what have you learned from your kids these last weeks?
Well, here's a lesson for anyone who may be struggling to stay committed to their Lenten promise. Oh, anyone out there? Raise your hands.
Yeah,
yes,
that's me. Okay. Hands raised. Yeah.
So before Lent even began, I'll just back us up a bit. Before Lent even began, I was heading off to school one day to pick Leo up. And before I left the house, I grabbed this package of these chocolate covered berries. You get them at Costco. I mean, so then they're in bulk and we have lots of them and they're delicious.
Yes.
The only thing is, despite their deliciousness, they do hurt my tummy a little bit. I get a tummy ache if I consume too many.
Okay.
But still, they're delicious. So I eat them anyway, and I just suffer the consequences. I'm a grown up. I can deal with it. So I pick Leo up from school. Leo is very observant and has an excellent smeller. So as soon as I give him a hug, he's like, "You're eating those chocolate things." And I'm like, "Yes, I am." He said, "Can I have one?"
Funny.
I'm like, "Of course, I'll share with you." I said, "But careful, don't eat too many. They'll give you a tummy ache." And he's like, "Well, if they give you a tummy ache, then why do you eat them?" Well, I eat them because they're so delicious. Then Leo starts off with this. "Here's what I do when I want to have something that I'm not supposed to have." Like, oh, this is going to be good. I can't wait for what I'm about to hear. So here's what Leo does. I walk toward the thing. I stop. I turn myself around. And I go do something else. Those were his words of wisdom, his advice for his mom, who has no self-control. So I'm like, okay, yeah, basically you acknowledge the temptation, say no, distract yourself with something else. Like, that's pretty wise. So, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to try that. I'll remember that, Leo. I'll put that in my pocket. So then we enter into Lent. And some of Leo's older siblings and Leo himself, they're struggling with their commitment. They want the show or the snacks or the dessert. It's hard. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to share with you what Leo told me. So if you're struggling, you want the thing, just walk towards it, turn yourself around, and then just go do something else. The kids were like, "That's stupid. Why would we do that? If we're not supposed to have it, why would we go look at it? That's just going to make me want it more." So let's just avoid the whole thing. Like, mm-hmm. lead us not into temptation, right? Like, why would we do that? But I was thinking about it and their reaction. I thought, you know, We're not always going to be able to hide from the things that haunt us or hurt us. Sometimes we will have to come face to face with those very things that tempt us, with the sin that we can't resist. And when we have to face them, what will our strength of character be? Will we be able to turn ourselves around, or will we fall victim to them? Are we prepared to look straight into our sin and turn away, to say no and make the better choice? And I think, I mean, we can read about this in the Bible too. I was looking, like, surely there's something to back me up here. So I found Proverbs 24:10. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Like, well, I don't want that. So, and from James 1:12, blessed is anyone who endures temptation. Such a one has stood the test and will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. So, like, Leo's on to something here. I want to be among those. Blessed are those who endure a temptation, who can look at it in its face and be like, no, just turn yourself around and go do something else. So here we are, still some weeks left to go in Lent. And I think it's okay to be tempted. It's okay to face the thing that you want, but you can't have or shouldn't have. But then what? What will you do with that temptation? How will you respond? So I guess for me and for you and for anyone who's listening, I pray for the strength of character to walk toward it, to turn around, go away from it, and go do something else.
I love that. I love that. I love that. The wisdom of Leo. Yes, I think my initial reaction would have been the same as the other kids. Why would I do that? But you're right. Sometimes we have to because there's no other option. How do we build that character? You start with the little chocolate covered berries
Just turn away from those. Once
and
you're on
then
to those, there's no stopping.
and then you'll be stronger when it's about cigarettes or something else. That's what you tell your kids.
Not a
Start with the
problem on
berries.
yesterday.
Yes. Okay, good Lenten lesson from Leo. Thank you very much. As we all struggle with little and not so little temptations.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, they're out there all the time, everywhere you face. So, what will you do with them?
Amen. Thank you, Jillian. It's good to see you, and I hope that you have a good rest, you and the whole family, good rest of the Lenten season.
Thanks, same to you.
Jillian Cantor, always eating chocolate covered berries and learning something from her kids. She's the wife of David and the mother of Joseph, Henry, Annie, Clara, Jane, and very wise Leo.
Hi, I'm Michael James Meddy, and you're listening to the Salt and Light Hour with Deacon Pedro.
You can watch Salt and Light Television on our streaming platform, Salt and Light Plus. Find out how to subscribe at slmedia.org. And now it's time for Book Ends with Germaine Bagnell, with a heavy, dense book by John Paul II, Saint John Paul II.
Saint John Paul II, yes. Today we have Love and Responsibility. And
Okay.
what initially actually threw me off was the name, because I saw Kara Wojtyła on it, and I had to actually look that up. Being a revert, you know, my papal names aren't up to snuff. But this one came across my lap, because I'd been reading just a lot of articles, and they kept referencing theology of the body. And in one of the articles was talking about love and responsibility. So I was like, you know what? At the time, I was a month away from being married. And I figured, if there's a time to look up and understand love and responsibility, I feel like now is the appropriate time. And
Okay. So
yeah.
you found that it was a good book for marriage.
Yes, I think it's a very good book for marriage, but I think this is also great for single Catholics also, because he doesn't just talk about love and marriage. He gets down to how people see sex, see love, see how they work together. One of the interesting concepts that he was talking about was utilitarianism and the use of sex, and when it's taken outside of the concept of marriage, it's that utility is I guess he breaks it down on how people get used, because now it's not necessarily about the sacred act of being called into creation. Now it's about feeling good. It's about the use of the other person. And, you know, we see that pretty rampant throughout our society, like the idea of sex within marriage is not widely adhered to. And there's no judgment. This is just stating what is. And within the book, he talks about that, where if people are putting the notion of the good at the top of their value, but the value of good to the person is how they feel. Like, I want to feel good, so I'm going to do this act, use this person
Of course,
for this act. And it's both ways, for men and women, and women towards men. So that was a really, really interesting concept of how he broke it down. And with that, there's something that kind of stuck with me in the chapter of the person and the sexual urge. He wrote out that man is not responsible for what happens to him in the sphere of sex, since he's obviously not himself the cause of it, but is entirely responsible for what he does in this sphere. So it's really going back to our free will and like that sense of accountability of when we're dealing with the idea of the idea and act of sex, and even the idea and act of chastity, because there's a certain love and responsibility that comes with that too.
That's true. It's interesting.
Which is something I had never thought of, that like if you're just chaste, just to brag about, you know, there's a whole sect of people out there who is like who have stepped away from relationships and sex, but it's not necessarily to give it to God. It's the utility is the good focused on themselves versus the idea of chastity, because it's a gift from God. Which is interesting. It's just a concept I hadn't really considered before, you know, because it's just taught that, you know, sex is supposed to be marriage and that's that, but like just that added notion.
That is interesting. And it comes out in theology of the body as well. And you're right. I've never read Love and Responsibility. I have studied theology of the body quite a bit. And you do that. You think it's all about love and marriage and sex and responsibility commitment and relationships. And then all of a sudden there's this whole thing about chastity and celibacy and virginity. And you're like, oh, they're the same. They're the same thing.
The same
right?
thing.
The same thing. Love is a gift. Our sexuality is a gift. Our bodies are gifts.
Yes.
And when we turn that around and we destroy the gift, that's when there's a problem. And that's kind of the misguided, I guess, the what's happening in society now. The gift has been misguided.
Totally misguided. And an interesting thing is that he introduced the concept of utilitarianism in the beginning, but when he starts to speak about marriage, it's still there, because even within marriage, like, obviously that's where we're called to, within marriage, that's where you can have sex and it's meant for procreation, but that doesn't mean that people don't have the ability to just use the person for the act.
Of course.
That's not something that outside of this book, I'd never heard that broken down to theologically. If that sort of makes sense, because
it does.
The idea of, like, within Catholicism, obviously sex is for marriage for sex, and it's to procreate. But he really calls us to remain responsible within there, and that, like, as men, not to just use our wives, and vice versa. But also, there's times to be chaste within a marriage and navigating these sort of times, and that call for discernment. And there's just so much to unpack. And I know this segment you won't even begin to scratch the surface for it, because there's just so much.
But if anything,
it's very rich.
If anything, and I kind of I'm ashamed to say, but I kind of fall in this category. There may be listeners out there. There's a lot of information about theology of the body, which is great. So I'm sure that everybody's listening has heard, at least have heard of theology of the body, but maybe they haven't heard about Love and Responsibility, or you think that Love and Responsibility was a book that had to do about, you know, with politics or something else, right? I wonder if, I mean, clearly it was written before he was Pope. He was written by Karol Wojtyła.
Yes, and so, it was the first copyright was 1960, like when originally.
Yeah, so you can see you can see maybe the seeds of theology of the body in Love and Responsibility, and so maybe it is. I don't know if that's a good place to start, like you did. Maybe it is, but maybe people that have already studied theology of the body can go back and read Love and Responsibility and kind of sort of see how these ideas were germinating in the mind of John Paul.
Yeah,
fascinating.
Absolutely. And I would highly recommend it, but I'd also tell everybody to give themselves a bit of grace and work your way through slowly. Like I'm a generally a quick reader. I was literally I felt like I was reading this book for like 2 months. So give yourself some grace and use a pen. Don't be afraid to highlight and slowly work your way through. Cause there's a lot of great value. And like now that I'm married, we're hoping to be blessed with children. Mm-hmm. And you know, now it changes how I'll have these sort of discussions with my future children.
Yes.
You know? So
yes.
It's a really, really,
interesting,
really deep and great book.
Okay, good. Love and Responsibility. That's it. We got 2-ish weeks of Lent left. Maybe that's could be something people can pick up for Lent. Read Love and you can't read it in 2 weeks, 2 months. Love and Responsibility with Grace. By Karol Wojtyła. Thank you, Jermaine. Thank you for that. It is actually not a book that I expected you to cover.
I told you, I read everything.
Yeah, you do. You do. And I think we all should be open to reading everything. And we should be reading certainly things that have been written by our saints. And this falls in that category. So, Love and Responsibility by Karol Wojtyła. Thank you, Jermaine.
A pleasure.
Have a blessed end of the Lenten season. Jermaine Bagnell is our book contributor. He's also the producer of the Salt and Light production Working in Faith. You can watch that at slmedia.org and you can follow him at Jermaine Bagnell. Coming up in our second half hour, the latest installment of the Little Duglings Young Adult Book Series, and we meet singer-songwriter Michael Zabrocki, so stay tuned. Welcome to the Salt and Light Hour Part 2. I'm Deacon Pedro. Carissa Douglas and her husband Patrick have 15 children, and as the children were growing up, in order to help them learn about the faith, Carissa began telling them and writing stories. This has evolved into The Little Duglings, a series of adventure books based on the children. Last time Carissa was here on the show, she told us about her young adult novels. Some of the children are now adolescents. She's written 3. Mystic Informant, about the battle of good and evil, featuring the children's adventures with St. Padre Pio, Lair of Illusion, which tells an adventure with the 6 eldest kids, and St. John Henry Newman. The third book, Cryptic Crusade, is about their adventures with St. Teresa of Avila, and now the fourth book is out, Serpent in the Scabby. To tell us more, I am now joined by Carissa Douglas. Carissa, it's so good to see you. Welcome back to the Salt and Light Hour.
Good to be here.
So, we got 2 books to talk about. Maybe you can give us the summary of the newest one, Serpent in the Scabby.
Okay, so Serpent in the Scabby was just released January of this year.
Uh-huh.
And it's a pretty exciting journey because it actually takes place in Rome at the Vatican.
I love it.
And it's actually, most of the adventure takes place underneath in the necropolis, the city of the dead, amongst the tombs and the remains. It's kind of different from the other books in the sense that it gives a bit more a sense of archaeology and the hunt for a lost treasure. It encompasses a lot of church history.
Mm-hmm.
And the saint that's entrusted to them is a former pope, Pope John Paul II.
Oh, I love it. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, guns.
Okay, so just to make sure that the listeners are on here. So the stories are obviously fiction. And there's always a mystical element to them. But these are your children that you're...
That's right. And there's a lot of them.
And there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. At least the 14. I don't know. This one, do you focus more on the older ones?
14, but we usually just focus on the older ones because they're the ones that don't need parental supervision so they can go off on adventures.
Exactly. No, I liked Cryptic Crusade, which was the previous one. We also featured the parents and there were some aunties I wondered if some of these characters were also based on real people or actually real people.
They are. And thankfully, I think my aunts know that they're involved in the stories. They're a combination of aunts and grandparents and some quirky people I've met in real life. And some people assume that the characters are absolute caricatures or that they're just blunt. But honestly, if they met my family, they probably start to second guess that assumption.
Oh, that's so funny. That's so helpful when you're a writer. Presumably, I mean, you started writing stories to teach some things to your children. And then I think the stories started to take a life on their own.
That's right.
Last time you told us that your children, especially the older ones now, are actually helping you write the stories. Is that still your process?
It is. They definitely give their input because it's dealing with them. So sometimes I'll write something that they said and they're like, oh, don't write that. I said that.
Okay.
Change it up. So sometimes it's a bit of a challenge actually, because I can't write everything I want to, but at the same time, they're avid readers. They really love books. And so I take their criticism to heart because they know good stuff. And so when I get their stamp of approval, I know that it's going to be some good reading for people. And they also are really good at even along the way, because when I write, I'm a strange writer in the sense that I don't always know exactly where I'm going. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm on the adventure with them, so I'll read the chapters as I write them. And sometimes it's interesting to see their reactions, and the reactions that I gauge sometimes affect where I take the next step or what direction I go. And these books are interesting, as you said, because there's parallel dimensions kind of throughout the story. There's the regular world, I guess the everyday world, but then they're given a mission by God and they're assigned a saint to help them with a particular mission. But usually that saint is able to take them into almost like a secondary dimension that's might be in this world or might not be, but it gives a spiritual truth, or it displays spiritual truths in a tangible way. So when we're told, like, when you do this, like you pray the rosary, you're battling demons, you're doing this, but actually the children are able to see the demons that they're battling. They're able to see how powerful that their prayers are, or even some of the little sacrifices they make around the house, like how those actually become weapons that they use to fight these demons or this dark side. And it's a lot of fun too, because even if they're with a saint who possesses certain even mystical gifts that they were given on earth, the children are able to use those same gifts.
Yeah.
And sometimes even it's like, gifts of the spirit or fruits of the spirit, and they're physical, tangible items that show them a means by which they can use that in battle. So it's very interesting.
It is very interesting. And I wanted to ask, so with Lair, I think it was Lair of Illusion, your second book, that it was very clear that it was, as you said, the gifts of the spirit. With Cryptic Crusade, with Saint Teresa of Avila, she also gives them gifts. So how do you really look into the life of the saint and try to glean sort of like what gifts or how, what gift, like, I don't know, I don't even know where you would start. Tell us a little bit about that process.
I do try to get to know the saint first before going on the journey with them. And so in the case of Saint Teresa of Avila, she had particular visions or even images given to her, real visions. She's also able to levitate because she gets so caught up in the just the magnitude of Christ, especially in the Eucharist. She would oftentimes be floating up, and she had some of the nuns sit on her. She would ask them
to hold her down
because she didn't want people to be staring at her. And she was funny because she was so powerful in that even she had her dear friend with Saint John of the Cross, and he was a bit more stern, and so he would oftentimes chastise her. And that in the book, actually, I captured this a moment of her reminiscing about, floating up, and her Saint John of the Cross basically telling her, like, okay, I'm going to give you less of the host. I'll give you a portion of it. And she's going to laugh at him as though a smaller portion will have
would
a less
make a difference. Yeah.
With her, I just read about her life. So there are certain just powerful things to be shown. Holy water was shown to be really powerful. Mm-hmm. But then she also had just these incredible, almost metaphors, but they would come in physical ways. So she'd be given like a cross, and the cross would be endowed with jewels, and those jewels symbolize things.
Yes.
So
yes.
I used a lot of those encounters. Plus her major work was the interior castle. And so that is actually, that's the place where the children are brought to. So it's interesting with that book, because a lot of her metaphors and a lot of her experiences were able to come to reality, become an actual place to explore and to learn things.
Yeah. Now with Serpent in the Scabbard, and I haven't read this one yet, but because, I mean, St. John Paul II, I mean, he was alive, you know, 20 years ago. Yeah. So did that also make the story a little different in that it was kind of more contemporary?
It was, in the sense that I've always felt a special connection to him, because actually my husband and I, we really call ourselves his couple, or a JP2 couple.
Yeah.
Because we met, actually, it was a retreat preparing for World Youth Day in Toronto a year before he came.
Wonderful.
So that's where we met, and it was incredible because it was very quick, and we felt God really pulling us together tightly, so much so that by the time we went to World Youth Day a year later, we were married and expecting our first child.
Oh my gosh.
So we're just like, this man.
Yes, this man, of course.
Huge impact. And so I kind of play with that a little bit, where the kids are like, you know, like we're here because of you, like, you know,
that's wonderful.
So there is something really intimate and beautiful about that. But also, for the inspiration for this book, we went to the World Meeting of Families last year, I think, and we were delegates for Canada, and it was a huge honor. And I was sitting up close to the big pillars in front of St. Peter's, and I'm looking at the altar where, like, everything was close proximity. It was so beautiful, and Mass is going on, and of course I kind of gave in to my horrible tendency of daydreaming, which I think probably comes with being a writer. I think I come by it honestly. So I start like daydreaming. I didn't mean to, but I turn and I'm looking at these giant pillars, and all of a sudden in my mind, I see John Paul II peeking out from behind the column.
Oh, hilarious.
And it's so bad. Yeah. I really do try to focus, but this is what happened.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he opened a panel on the column, and he kind of motioned to me to come. And I could see spiral staircases embedded in the column. And I was like, oh, you want me to come in? Okay. So that was actually what started me realizing that that was the next saint, and that was the next story.
I love it. Okay. Yeah. Say no more, because we need to get the book.
I know.
I love this. Okay. But quickly then, are you already working on the next one? Is there going to be a number 5?
I actually right now just am doing the finishing touches on a board book, a baby board book.
Okay.
And I feel really strongly about this one. It's actually one of my favorite books, even though it's a toddler book.
Mm-hmm.
It's available if your audience wants a sneak peek on that one. What I have so far is actually available. If you go to my website, which is littledudlings.com, there is one of the titles is Baby Dudlings. And if you click on it, you can actually read the book. I've given the book online just for people to check out, because currently Scepter isn't able to print board books. I felt such a love for this book that I wanted to still let people access it early on before I find it.
That's good to know. Okay.
The right publishing or printing.
Yeah.
And honestly, my toddlers are addicted to it. They come up on my lap and they say Mother Mary's Heart, and it that's the title, Mother Mary's Heart.
Love it.
So good. If you want to check that out, it's fun.
Yeah. Okay, good. So littledudlings.com. That's good, because don't want to focus too much on those young adults or those young teenagers. Don't forget about the little ones, the baby Dudlings. And I know that there's a new one. There's one, a very, very young one.
Name, a two-month-old Leo.
Oh, good Pope name right there.
Yep.
Oh, Carissa, thank you so much for telling us a little bit about what you do today and about your family. Thank you.
Thank you.
Carissa Douglas is the author of the Little Dudlings book series. Her latest book is Serpent in the Scavvy, published by Scepter Publishers. You can find out more and purchase the books at littledouglings.com. That's also where you can find the board books that Carissa was talking about for the little ones. Here now is Michael Zabrocki with Only You, which he calls the title track of his new album, Consecration, Hymns and Prayers to the Sacred Heart of Jesus.
I consecrate my person and my life, my actions, my sufferings and every strife, that all my being may be set apart for you.
Listening to Michael Zabrocki with Only You from his new album, Consecration, Hymns and Prayers to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and playing guitar along there with Michael is John Michael Talbot. I first met Michael Zabrocki some 20 or more years ago as we were getting ready for World Youth Day 2002. After that, I really didn't hear much from him for many, many years until he started working with John Michael Talbot. That's how I came to know that he is still doing music, and his music has changed quite a bit from the Christian rock he used to do to more sacred and more suited for the liturgy. And now he has a new album, which we've been listening to, dedicated to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And so to tell us more, I am now joined by Michael Zabrocki from his home in New York City. Michael, welcome to the Salt and Light Hour. It's so good to see you. It's been a long time.
It's been way too long, my friend. This is I'm honored to be here. Greetings from America.
It's good to see you because I remember you with long hair. I think it was a bigger beard. You looked like you were driving a Harley.
Yeah, it was at one point I almost tucked my hair in the back of my pants, and I had a perm at one point too.
I believe that. Yeah. Okay, so tell us a little bit about, obviously we can't get the full story, but tell us a little bit about growing up. Did you grow up in New York State?
I grew up in New York City. Yeah, there's New York City, and then I'm one of the boroughs in New York City, so I come from Queens, New York.
Yeah.
And growing up, man, I played in rock bands. I was playing all every club, like from wherever you could imagine.
So how old were you when you started rocking?
Oh, way too young. I started, I was probably 13, 14.
And, oh, really?
When I was a senior in high school, 16, I was getting into clubs with a fake ID so that I could go in and play. Yeah.
And you're a guitar player, right? That was your main instrument?
I was playing bass at the time.
Oh, were you? Oh, so am I. I'm a bass player too.
Yeah. I'm a keyboard player today, mostly. Okay. But I still play bass. I play guitar. But I back then in the rock and roll days, I was a bass player.
Yeah. Bass player. And did you grow up in a Catholic home?
I did. Boy, did I grow up in a Catholic home. you know, I can't even tell you. You know, I was the altar server back in the day, but we would play the 6:45 play. See how I talk?
Yeah.
I would serve the 6:45 mass, weekday mass in the morning. I wanted to do that. My parents were like, why would you do that? But like my father was driving the nuns around. My mother was ironing the altarpieces. We were a Catholic home.
Did you ever see were those two parts of your life separated? Like, did you see like I could do Christian music, or you just like I want to be a rock star, but then I can be an altar server at the same time?
I was, you know, when I was playing in the rock bands, we weren't doing anything offensive. You know, we weren't doing any songs that couldn't be sung in heaven. And this was like in the 70s, you know.
Yeah.
So there was a good mix in the 70s. You could listen to the same station and hear John Denver at one second. Then you hear Led Zeppelin.
That's
then
true.
You hear Deep Purple. Then you hear the Carpenters.
That's
you know?
True. So yeah. Yeah.
You heard everything. So you know, the 70s had a good diverse period of music. But while I was doing that, I was still then playing in a folk group. So while I was doing the rock and roll stuff during the week, I was on the weekend doing folk masses. Yeah,
folk masses. At what point did you start thinking that the two could come together, that you could actually be doing Christian music or rock, Christian rock?
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, when we had to learn songs for mass with the folk group, everybody would have this, you know, back in the 70s, everybody got a copy of Peter Frampton's Frampton Comes Alive. It came with a bottle of Tide detergent, I think. I'm joking. Everybody had to have it.
Yeah, it's
but
funny.
If you were playing in church, everybody had to have all of the Weston Priory albums, like Gregory Norbit,
who's
a very dear friend of mine.
Oh, lovely.
You know? And, you know,
and,
you
had
to
St. Louis Jesuits.
St. Louis Jesuits,
yeah,
man.
Of course.
You had to have the Damians, who people don't all talk about.
No, people don't remember. Damians. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I got to, you know, hang with these guys and, you know, later on. But so they were putting out albums, though, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of the start of it. And then once, like, I started getting out of high school and more into college and more into playing more music, that's when the Amy Grants and I still even remember BJ Thomas, who, you know, put out, and you know, he won every award for his Christian music. So I was kind of inspired by just holding the album.
So
it was like there was a constant, though, throughout. Even though when I was playing rock bands, there was a constant with my faith. And even as like a little child, I remember looking up at the sky. I love astronomy, you know?
Okay.
And I knew there was somebody bigger than me up, you know? And
right. So it wasn't a weird thing.
No.
Because Christian music was, exactly. Very. And you had all those albums. So, but there was a progression. Was there a change? Because when the style of music changed for you, when you started doing kind of more sacred music, like when did
I didn't really, my first album, had a definite rock edge to it.
Yeah.
And that became a little weird. Not weird, but you know, it was funny. I was this guy with the long hair. So the Catholics, you know, they want to reach the youth. And so they'd come to Mike Sabraki in this area and say, hey, we got a youth festival coming up and you got to do it. And I always disagreed that they would pick me because I had long hair. They were looking at me like as how I looked.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's funny when you want to reach the youth. I knew this back when I was a youth, and I know it today. The youth are not stupid.
Yeah,
they want the truth.
They're authentic.
That's all they want. They want the authenticity.
Yeah,
they don't want a watered down version of Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
They want the truth. They want it straight up. They want their drink straight up, no ice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. And it doesn't matter what style of music it is, as long as it's authentic.
As long as it's authentic. And if you're talking to them and you preach it to them or sharing or just whatever, telling your story.
Yeah.
Tell the, They want the truth. That's all they want. And if they get the truth, they'll be inspired by it.
But it's okay. But you said something just now that I think is interesting. You said that that rock album, that first album, that there was something weird about it. Do you feel that there's something more authentic?
Well, you know what it was? Weird
something that's
me.
More liturgical or sacred or even
right.
folk?
Here's the thing. Some music is wonderful for edification. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It'll build you up. But not all music, not all Catholic or Christian music is sacred and should be done within the context of a liturgy.
Of course. Of course.
Okay.
Yep.
And I learned a lot about that over the past few years, especially from guys like Ricky Minala, you know?
Uh-huh, Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Not all music is more liturgical. Now, would you say that this new album dedicated to the Sacred Heart, is it intended for liturgy? Is it intended for, I mean, obviously it's intended for prayer.
Yeah, it's definitely not all liturgy. I would say it's more in this album. There are some songs, obviously, that are on it that are good, that would work very well within the context of a liturgy. But it's also meant to increase devotion to the Sacred Heart.
Right.
Okay.
Now, I presume that you have a devotion to the Sacred Heart. Is that
you know, and it's funny. That's one of those things, man, that I had to really pray about and think about. I didn't have that. You know, everybody had that picture of the Sacred Heart. You know, I have one hanging up
that's
here.
True.
You know, the picture with the eyes that look around, you know, those they follow you everywhere.
Yeah.
Everybody had that picture. And what happened was during COVID, I was recording masses, videotaping masses in my parish. And my pastor had a relationship with these nuns that had a deep devotion to the Sacred Heart. And he was like their chaplain. So he'd go over to Brooklyn, across the bridge. To say masses for them. And they were so upset that they couldn't have their 9-day novena or anything. And he sat down with me. I said, well, let's just record 9 masses for them and give them their novena online. You know?
Yeah.
So I had to learn a lot about the devotion and how it started. And, you know, it piqued my interest about Sister Margaret Mary Alacoque. And it was their simple sharing about it that made me, you know, they were very kind to me, too. They were very nice.
Yeah.
And they had something in them that I wanted. And so I dove into this. And this album was really, it started out as me just doing something nice for them. I wanted to record an album that they could give away.
Right.
And I've probably given them hundreds of copies. They're giving them away. And I think that's beautiful, you know. It was one of the smartest things I ever said and one of the dumbest things I ever said when I said I'd record this album. Because, it really made me dive deep into the devotion. But at the same time, how do you pray to a Sacred Heart?
Yeah.
A heart, a heart. You know, talking to an organ
I know. Yeah.
That's not what it is. And I had to really study and try to and pray and really say, what are we talking about here?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really the love of Jesus. I think you played one of the songs that all is changed to love, right?
Yes. Yeah. At the top
earlier
of the show.
The top of the show. And that song came from a very simple line that Sister Margaret Mary Alacoque said. I'm going to paraphrase here that in the heart of Jesus, everything is changed to love.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it could be your failings, your sins, your doubts, your fears. In the heart of Jesus, it all just changes to love.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant a lot to me.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think just that, if any listeners are struggling, wondering, you're right. Like, what is that weird thing that we pray to a heart? Just that one line kind of helps us understand, in a way,
that's it in a nutshell.
You need to know about the Sacred Heart. And we pray that the album is also going to help people get close. You don't have to figure it out in your head. You can just pray and pray with the music.
That's right.
Yeah. Mike, that's all the time we have, but
it's
been great chatting with you. Great connecting. I hope that you're working on more music so that we can have another reason to bring you back on the show, play some more.
Oh, absolutely.
So that will be great. And thank you for this beautiful gift. I'm sure the sisters are grateful, but I'm sure our listeners are grateful to have another excuse to learn more about why we should be praying to the Sacred Heart of Jesus.
Thank you, my friend. Honored to be. Thank you.
God bless.
God bless.
You can learn more about Michael Zabrocki at his website, michaelzabrocki.com. And it's Zabrocki, Michael Zabrocki.com. Here now is Michael Zabrocki with a reimagined version of the classic hymn, Our God Reigns. He titles this one, God, You Reign, from his album, Consecration, Hymns and Prayers to the Sacred Heart of Jesus.
Oh, lovely are the mountains, are the feet of him who brings good news. Good news announcing peace, proclaiming news of happiness. God, you reign. 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 You had no majesty that we should be drawn to you.
We're listening to Michael Zabrocki with God, You Reign from his new album, Consecration, Hymns and Prayers to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And that will take us to the end of our program today. If you missed any part of the program or to listen to the whole show again, the best way to listen to the Salt and Light Hour is on our website, slmedia.org. That's where you can find all the Salt and Light Hour programs we have made over the last 14 years. You can also, of course, subscribe to the Salt and Light Hour Catholic podcast anywhere. Thank you for being with us today. Let's continue to pray for peace in Ukraine and peace in the Holy Land. Let's pray to Saint Joseph, and you can also start praying to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. May you continue to have a blessed Lenten season and stay away from temptation. Remember, walk towards it, stop, turn around, and go do something else. Such good advice. I'm Deacon Pedro, and this has been the Salt and Light Hour.